So our exploration of koans that have been inspiring or meaningful to us continues. I notice as the Anga goes on that with each talk, I become inspired not just by the koans, but by the wisdom, compassion, and sincerity of everyone giving the talks and everyone listening and everyone engaging in the Dharma dialogues. It feels like we're creating some kind of a field of learning together. And it's sort of my dream, and we're doing it. And so I'm grateful to everyone who's here tonight. So many of you, people that I personally have worked with for many years, played with for many years, and some of you new friends who have just begun this play of Zen practice with us. So this koan that sprang up for me a day or two ago as a koan that was very inspiring to me in my early days as a Zen student. I originally encountered it in The Gateless Gate, the collection of koans by Wu Min, and it's number 15 there. And when I was looking around for a version that I wanted to read this evening, I found that it also occurs in the Japanese collection, Entangling Vines. So I'm going to read that version tonight. And it turns out that there's a follow-up koan to this koan, which I didn't know about. So tonight you're going to get a twofer. Mm-hmm. Two koans from Entangling Vines. So case 15 from The Gateless Gate and case 188 from Entangling Vines. When Dongshan Shuchu first met Yunmen, Yunmen asked, "Where did you just come from?" Dongshan answered, "From Chadu." "Where did you spend the training season?" Yunmen asked. Dongshan said, "At Baotse in Hunan." Yunmen asked, "And when did you leave there?" "August 25th, Dongshan answered. Yunmen said, "You're spared 70 blows of my stick. Go to the meditation hall." After the evening lecture, Dongshan inquired privately of Yunmen, "Where was my error?" Yunmen said, "You rice bag, wandering about like that from Jiangxi to Hunan." At these words, Dongshan attained a clear, deep awakening. He said, "Someday, I'll go where there's no one around and build myself a hut. I'll store no rice and plant no vegetables, but will receive worthy friends coming and going from all directions. Pulling out their pegs and yanking out their wedges, snatching away their grubby hats and ripping off their smelly robes, I'll make them clean and free. I'll make them people with nothing to do." Yunmen said, "You're no larger than a coconut, yet how big your mouth is." Dongshan then departed. And here's the follow-up koan, case 189. This occurs a few generations later, because the first dialogue became so famous, people like to comment on it. So Tsimeng Chu Yuan said to Huanglong Huinan, "If Huanglong has studied Yunmen Zen, surely you understand it. Tell me, when Dongshan Shaochu was spared 70 blows of Yunmen's staff, should he have been struck, or should he not have been struck?" "Oh, he should have been struck," answered Huanglong. Tsimeng, his face stern, said, "If, after hearing that Yunmen spared Dongshan 70 blows, you feel that Dongshan should have been struck, then you should be struck from dawn to dusk, whether hearing the caw of a crow, the cry of a magpie, or the sounds of the bells, the wooden fish, and the gong. When would you ever stop getting the stick?" Huanglong, surprised, stepped back. Si Ming said, "At first I thought I could not serve as your teacher, but now I see that I can." He allowed Huang Long to make obeisance. So these two koans maybe contain some pointers for all of us about what it means to be a Zen student. And the original inspiration for reading this koan for me was the recollection of first hearing it when I was a young Zen student, and then studying it with my first teacher, and then studying it again with my actual teacher, James Fort, the teacher of my heart. This moment that Dongshan has with Yunmen, where he is startled into deep self-reflection, was something that I was very familiar with. I had experienced Zen again and again as a series of being startled out of my conceptions of myself and of the world, again and again, knocked around. I don't know if you're anything like this, but I can spend a lot of time in my own mind making long lists of how inadequate I am. Maybe you also have this particular skill. In my case, I could give you evidence for what a terrible person I am in all the different roles that I've played in my life, how I've disappointed people, how I've not come up to snuff, you might say, how I haven't fulfilled my obligations, how, well, you know that story, as a daughter, as a sister, as a student, as a wife, as a mother, as a Zen teacher, as a colleague, as a friend. In all these roles, I failed somehow. And this failure, every once in a while, it just opens me up, and I can't believe all the mistakes I've made. Thank goodness for the gata of repentance. Thank goodness that I can look at my life and realize that I've always been trying my best. But in retrospect, that is, looking again and again, I see that there's a story that I become attached to that begins, "if only." And it seems to me that when we're in a situation like this, we can go a few different directions, and I've gone all these directions. One of the directions that we can go in is the direction of feeling sorry for ourselves. Oh, just what a terrible life I've led. So many errors, so many mistakes, so many misspoken words, so many actions that I regret. Poor me. And then there's another road to go down, which is, well, it's not really my fault. It's all these jerks who've put me in these positions where I was just forced to do the wrong thing. Maybe you have some variations of those two stories. But in this story, Dongshan, who, by the way, here's another mistake I've made. I've always thought that this Dongshan was the Dongshan who was the famous creator, along with one of his students, of the Cao Dong school, the Soto school. But it's not that Dongshan. It's a different Dongshan. It's Dongshan who lived about 100 years later and was not a Soto teacher, but a teacher of the Linji school, actually one of Yunmen's Dharma heirs, as we hear in this story. So this Dongshan has come to meet Yunmen, who in those days was so famous, and he engages in conversation with the famous Yunmen. And Yunmen is kind of luring him into a trap. He's asking him apparently ordinary questions. And every time he asks a question, this young Dongshan answers with the most obvious answer. He asks him where he was recently, and Dongshan names a town nearby where he supposedly had been spending the night before coming to Yunmen's monastery. And then he asks him what he did for the Ango, for the summer Ango, the summer retreat period, and he tells him the monastery he was at. And then he asks him, well, when did you leave there? And he tells him the date. So it appears that he's answering the questions with great honesty and clarity and straightforwardness. But then Yunmen says, I spare you 60 blows. You're not even worth hitting. Wow, what? And I've got to say that when I first encountered this koan, I was kind of upset with Yunmen. I thought Yunmen was being really mean. And he gets meaner as the koan goes on. But that's something I want to explore in a moment. What Dongshan did and what makes him such an exemplary student and what touches me in the deepest place about my commitment to Zen and a commitment that I've always had since I first started, this just bowing to the fortunate opportunity to study Zen and throwing my whole self into it. Whenever there's an opportunity to come and sit, I took it. Whenever there was a retreat, I tried to get there. There were some times in my life when I couldn't make it to retreats, but then as soon as I could again, I would come. I was very, very devoted. And the thing was that even though I was very, very devoted, I kept getting knocked off my seat by all these different life events. I kept being surprised. I kept being shocked into seeing that all of the ways I thought about myself and the world were flawed somehow. They were narrow, they weren't correct, they were limited and narrow. And every time that happened, I came back. I'm not saying this because I'm such a wonderful person, but I have a degree of tenacity, stubbornness. My mother used to say that I was like a dog with a bone. Just like Steve this morning holding on to that branch of the tree with his teeth. I so identify with that. Also, that koan also is one that occurred to me. I was happy that Steve gave the talk because it was such a beautiful explication of the man up a tree koan. But that was me. I just wanted to be good. I wanted to be a good Zen student. I wanted to get to the bottom of things. And I think Dongshan must have been like that too, because here he is, trying to be good. He's answering his teacher's questions, and then the teacher says, well, you're not even worth hitting. Go away. Go to the meditation hall, in this version. In the other version, he doesn't even say that. He just says, I spare you 60 blows. And in Wu Men's version, in the Gateless Gate, he spends the whole night thinking, what did I do wrong? In Wu Men's commentary, he talks about a night of tossing and turning, of encountering all of the different dualities in one line of Wu Men's commentary. In this one, he just comes back later that evening. But we can imagine that he went through the same turmoil on his cushion. What did I do wrong? And then he says the words that reveal him to be the dog with a bone, the man up a tree. He says, please tell me, where was I at fault? With great sincerity, he says this. He doesn't come in and say, what do you mean you're spare me 60 blows? What are you talking about? I gave you all the answers you asked for. I was good. He doesn't do that. He just says, where was I at fault? And in my old version of Yunmen, mean Yunmen says, you rice bag, which, by the way, is a really terrible insult in Zen. It means that you're just a person who comes to retreats to eat the rice. you're really worthless, like just, sitting on a cushion waiting for the meal. And, the problem we have here at the Ango is we have a really great cook. So all of us have fallen into that trap when the smells come from the kitchen. We all become rice bags. You rice bag. And in Woman's version, he says, why do you go about now north of the river, now south of the lake? Why do you wander about? Why do you go from place to place? And Woman's commentary and verse also talks about Dongshan receiving two arrows. The first arrow, of course, being, I spare you 60 blows, and the second arrow being, you rice bag. And it's enough. It pierces him through. The first arrow, a woman says, was shallow, but the second one was deep. Robert Aitken Roshi likes to say that the first one was deep and the second one was shallow. It was like he got knocked off his perch and then he just needed a little boop to get him thrown off the cliff. And so he woke up to his true nature. These stories are so misleading, of course, because they appear to glorify these moments. And anyone who's had a long career in Zen, or even a short one maybe, knows that we have endless moments like this. They come and they go, moments of clarity where everything seems to be clear. And then, of course, we say, oh, I've had a moment of clarity, and then it all starts to close up again. But one of the things I love about this version of the koan is that in Woman's version, it ends there. He has this great awakening. He bows to Yunmen, and that's the end of the story. But in the record of Dongshan, the stories of his teachings, this little part is quoted, and in Entangling Vines, it's also quoted. And I just want to read it again because I really love it. Someday I'll go where there's no one around and build myself a hut. I'll store no rice and plant no vegetables, but will receive worthy friends coming and going from all directions. Worthy friends is a translation of a phrase in Pali, in Sanskrit, Kalyana Mitra, which means friends of the heart, dear friends, spiritual friends. In a way, that's what we all are to each other. We are spiritual friends. We're all practicing hard, no matter what our roles happen to be, teacher or Dharma holder or senior Dharma teacher, monk, priest, practitioner. Those are all just different ways of talking about things. Really, we're all Kalyana Mitras. We're all spiritual friends. We're all sitting together to encourage each other to open up to the way. And this is Dongshan's great vision, to have spiritual friends come and go. And I have to say, me too. It's amazing. Whenever I hear that door open, whenever I hear footsteps on the porch, when we're having a regular practice period and the practice leader comes at 20 of or quarter of and rings the doorbell, I have to say my heart leaps a little bit. There's somebody who wants to play. And then we put out our cushions and people come and sit and we play together in this great field of the Dharma. And this is Dongshan's vision, to have his friends come and go, to find a place, like we say in the Grass of Hermitage, to build a hut, to sit and practice and trust that the practice itself will be the attractor. Not anything about us personally, not anything special, but just this great love of the Dharma. And then he says what he's going to do to all these good friends. And I have to say, I like this too. Pulling out their pegs, yanking out their wedges, snatching away their grubby hats, ripping off their smelly robes. What are these references to? Of course, they're the references to those stories that I was talking about before, the endless stories we tell ourselves about our failures, the endless stories we tell about our successes, about who we think we are, about the way the world is. All of it has to go, but we're not the ones who get rid of it. It goes through seeing it clearly. It goes through witnessing it, turning towards all of this grief and pain and sorrow and fear turning towards it, not to indulge in it and dive into it and get all mucky in it, but to see it for what it is. Just thoughts, just emotions, just a series of sensations with no reality, no reality. I guess that's all I can say. No reality. Reality as thoughts, reality as emotions, reality as sensations and perceptions. But the way we pull them all together and make up a story about ourselves, oh, it's such a strong habit in all of us. And the work in Zen is not to try to get rid of it or let it go or make it stop happening, but to see it for what it is. And if we're lucky, sometimes we do have teachers who snatch away our grubby hats. I can tell stories about grubby hats. He says, I'll make them clean and free. I'll make them people with nothing to do. Can you imagine being a person with nothing to do? What would that be like? It doesn't mean we stop doing things, but we're no longer caught by the doing. I think this is what Dongshan is pointing to. And then later on in the other koan, when the teacher asks, should he have been hit? I came across one translation of Koan 15 in the Gateless Gate where Dongshan is hit by Yunmen. He's hit 60 times by him. Hit or not hit, maybe it doesn't matter, but he asks, should he be hit? In Wu Men's commentary, he says, if you think he should be hit, then grasses and trees should all be hit. And here it's Si Meng, who apparently was quite a wild teacher, says to his potential student, Huang Long, if you think that Dongshan should have been struck, well, then you should be struck from dawn to dusk, whether hearing the caw of a crow, the cry of a magpie, or the sounds of the bells, the wooden fish, and the gong. When would you ever stop getting the stick? When our hearts are really open, when we've touched the tenderest places, then it is a little bit like we're being hit by the world. This morning, some of you were here and heard, maybe somebody told me it was the song of a cardinal. I don't know how it survives in the cold. But a beautiful little chirpy bird song came into the Zendo this morning. And if you heard it without thinking, oh, that's the sound of a bird, or, I wonder where that bird is keeping warm, or, wow, boy, that's kind of beautiful. I wish it was always like that instead of the stupid traffic and the siren noises. If you just heard the tweet-tweet-tweet, tweet-tweet-tweet, and it cut through you, then you have a little bit of a sense of what happened to Dongshan when he heard your rice bag. And also this other student, Huang Long, when Si Meng said to him, you should be struck day and night, Huang Long steps back in surprise. Another wonderful response. Going deeply into the where was I at fault, stepping back in surprise. These are the marks of people who are freshly experiencing the world. Not caught in their ideas any longer, but they have the capacity for wonder, for not knowing, for delving deeply into the real matter of who we are and what life is. What a pleasure to encounter them. And what a pleasure to be able to talk about them with you. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue, which is when you get to ask questions or make comments or speak your truth.
So thank you. And where you ended on the stepping back in surprise, that was one part that really grabbed me from the koan. Because it's just so easy to get caught in certainties, you know, like one building upon the other. And, you know, the longer I sit, the more, you know, certainties can come up, you know. And then when something happens, and it just pulls the rug out again. So it just seems like it's a constant practice of allowing the rug to be pulled out. And how to meet that with some kind of grace. as a student, that seems like quite a quite an important thing, and a struggle, you know, because we all want to be pleasing, you know, we all want to get it, we all just want to avoid the difficulties, you know, and it's such a powerful momentum that kind of builds on its own, and then to see, you know, to catch myself, you know, like getting caught in that particular story, you know, and then some little thing happening, you know. I mean, you might say something to me, and I'll go, "Oh, I'm a terrible student." You'd be so disappointed in me. And I think you know, anybody who works with a teacher experiences that, you know. Mm-hmm. And this student is such a beautiful example of, you know, stepping back in surprise, like noticing that that, you know, is what happened, and that openness that happens when you can do that, like letting go of the story and saying, "Oh, there was some other kind of certainty that, you know, maybe I can see that too." So thank you.
Thank you.
And hearing you, I go to the challenge of not trying to be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I find myself, you know, something comes at me and my first reaction is, "I'm okay." You know?
Yeah.
But when something hits us, to be hit, to be shocked or sad or angry or something, to let ourselves know it and also show it to the world. I think many of us were trained, you know, above all, don't give yourself away. You know, and the idea that we're working not to be calmer, but to be more easily touched, and to find the power of being touched rather than the power of trying not to be affected.
And you were gonna just say something about the teacher, and, you know, sparing the blows, and, you know, and so you could say something about
that. Well, it's interesting. I had thought about that, but then I thought, oh, the talk's going on long enough. But yeah, that a little coda. When I first encountered this koan, I was totally involved with Dongshan. He was me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh boy, yin men, like, take it easy. Like, why are you doing this? Why are you being so horrible? And then I put myself in yin men's place. Mm-hmm. And like, I really feel that way. When people are pretending to be somebody else, why do you wander now north of the river or south of the lake? I really want to know. Mm-hmm. What's up with you? Why are you hiding? Stop hiding. You know, but you can't make people stop hiding. When we're ready to come forward, we come forward. So it's this, like, yearning. You know, he has such... Yin Min is like this really famous Zen master, if you've heard stories about him before. Just really, you know, always cutting through and to the point. Beautiful, beautiful stuff, he says. And in this case, you know, he must have gone like, "Oh, here's somebody... Mm-hmm. What's with you?" Mm-hmm. So that's why I started to go with it. Really appreciating yin men. Mm-hmm. "You rice bag" is such a loving thing to say. Mm-hmm. Why do you go about, you know, why? Why do you go about? Mm-hmm. Why do you wander? Come on, come here. Mm-hmm. Get here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for asking.
when I go into a situation, well, of any kind of with the teacher, about a koan or even a question, my anxiety just shoots right up. I am so afraid. I mean, I'm so afraid of, you know, being embarrassed, humiliated, you know, sounding stupid, my mind going blank and freezing, and so I bring, you know, this to the encounter, this is it, and sometimes and so I miss that this is it, you know. I'm looking for something else. I'm supposed to look, you know, and so this is it. And the calling of you rice bag is just it, you know. That's it, and it allows the letting go of all that held together anxiety, stress, about, you know, that there's something that I don't know, that I'm looking for, and isn't present in that feelings that I'm experiencing at that time.
Yes, yes. Now, beautifully put, because I bet you're not the only one who feels those things. Yeah, and to know that the feeling those things is actually the presentation that the teacher is looking for. You know, that's impossible. How could that be? How could it be that your anxiety can be received, your blankness, your embarrassment, your shame could be received? But you know that it is. Sometimes. you know sometimes.
Yeah. And I need to experience it over and over and over again.
That's why we offer Dzogchen so much. When we say to people, you know, just come, right? What am I supposed to do? This.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, there had to be some real insight into where this student was, you know. Mm-hmm. Just a little push here now, you know. Yeah. And that, you know, because I don't get the sense that he's just calling everybody a rice bag, you know. It's important that it was, you know, this student and this time. Because I've had some of those encounters where, you know, it felt like I was looking for something, and then, you know, the teacher didn't give it to me. And, you know, it was like, wow, you know, it was very difficult to, but something very valuable to kind of be left out in the wind by myself. You know, and but to know that too, that was probably the approach necessary.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just kind of, you know, considering the wisdom of those moments and how do you pick your moments to teach. And, you know.
Yeah, and I think there's something in all of it that's. That it's not premeditated, you know, so it's not, I think it's more arising in the space in between, you know, so we have these dialogues in Dzogchen, and if both of us lean in, if the teacher as present as I can be, you as present as you can be, then the trusting is that the words that are spoken are exactly for us. And not because the teacher is so smart, and oftentimes we get, oh boy, I hope the teacher gives me a good word this time. You know, if only. But it's incumbent upon us to hear. And I think so being left out in the wind, then so whatever arises, can I receive it? This is, you know, let myself be hit by the word or the lack of the word or the image I had or whatever. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I was by the second koan, the follow-up koan, where the question is asked if the student should have been hit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, this was an interaction between a teacher and a student that ended up leading to an awakening or a realization. So isn't that exactly what should have happened? Why should have the student been hit at the moment?
Mm-hmm.
Just that the image of questioning that kind of stuck in my mind.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that, you know, there's so many questions in Zen tradition that are fixed in a way based on koan. So this is one of them. You know, should he have speared the 60 blows? And woman says, you know, that first part, if you think he should have been hit, then you should hit grasses and trees. But if you think that Yunmen was wrong to spare him, then you're not respecting Yunmen. Something like that. So it's like, it's one of those koans that catches you up, and should it be A or B? You know, right, wrong, good, bad. It's one of those dualistic things. And whenever anybody lands on one side, you know that they're in trouble.
Yeah, so Yogi Berra said, when you meet a fork in the road, take it. But in Zen, when you meet a fork in the road, don't.
Just appreciate it. Just appreciate it. A fork. You know, the other thing I love about this dialogue, too, you know, it's a very famous dialogue. And Yunmen gives him three opportunities to show up in the way we were just talking. And he just blithely goes along, you know, la, 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 la. Yeah, I was there, I was here, it was this date. And you almost feel, again, identifying with Yunmen, okay, well, let me ask you another question. And really, that's what we do in Doksan. We're trying to see who people are. And everybody's showing up, by the way. You're showing up perfectly. You can't do it any better. But sometimes we'll check in with you and ask you questions just to see, what are you ready for? And this guy, there must have been something that Yunmen saw in him beyond just those answers. You know, maybe this willingness to just answer. Maybe that's enough. Something. He saw something in him. One commentator on this koan says he must have seen a twinkle in his eye or something. But who knows? Maybe he didn't, but he felt his heart. And that's David's, you know, thing about when the two of them lean in. Maybe he saw the beginning of a lean in, and that was enough for him to take a chance and say, you know, I spare you 60 plus, get out of here, which is a common thing teachers appear to say. We just ring a bell.
Thanks.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a story. Does George Bowman, David's teacher, tell this story about going to see Suzuki Roshi?
I was going
to
tell that.
You want to tell the story?
Yeah, yeah. So my teacher, George Bowman, was going to be here on retreat, but got sick earlier in the week, so he won't be joining us. But in his honor, I'll tell one of his favorite stories.
Tell a story about him.
Which is, I guess it was in the late 60s, early 70s, he went to San Francisco and had an interview with Shunrui Suzuki. And so he goes in the room and bows and sits there, and Shunrui Suzuki says, "What's your name?" And George goes blank. "What is my name?" And after a few seconds, Suzuki says, no, "What is your name?" "Oh, George Bowman." So we can outsmart ourselves. Reading too many koans.
I want to say how much I appreciate you describing our practice as play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because often it's has a very frowny face in art and so on, and we're all wearing black and looking very serious. And but to me, that's a spirit that is so much more freeing and actually accurate than, I mean, it is work, we do things, but it's, you know, when I think of play, it's a thing that is just for its own sake.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's it doesn't take any meaning out. You know, if you're playing, you're just playing. The game is the game. We're mm-hmm. dancing. And why are we dancing? The answer is dancing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that even this kind of hard work and the turmoil and whatnot, if there's you can bring kind of a playful, I'm in the midst of a game attitude to that, it's very liberating. And I think even the most serious sorts of things can have a spirit of fun to them, like in play, where, you know, just the doing of the thing is its own reward. And, you know, and just that attitude was helpful.
I think that, I mean, there's really something wonderful in that, right, that you notice in this. I really appreciate you pointing that out as well, that I can, and you can hear that in this interaction between the teacher and the student. The questions are playful, mm-hmm. right? And he's, and you know, to sort of go back to what Aaron was saying, there's, you know, he sees this twinkle, right? The student's there, right? And so he's throwing the ball back and forth, like, so, where'd you come from? Right? What, you know, how long were you there? When did you leave? Oh, you know, how about this one? Here's a little bit of a harder ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you rice bag. But there's this invitation, right, to come here and play, right? You know, just sort of like be with me now. Right? Let's just throw this back and forth together. And then there's a point at which it's quite lovely, right, when the student's like, oh, okay.
I made a shot.
Look at me, I'm a coconut.
Oh, right, Dad. Well, isn't that a great one?
Yeah.
You're such a little coconut. You're such a big mouth. At the final blow, yeah. You met.
And even just all these forms and everything and kind of trying to get it right, mm-hmm. they're just, don't you want to know the rules of the game you're playing? It mm-hmm. makes it more fun.
And it's nice to hold it in that frame, and then the form isn't some precious, pure thing that is inscribed in stone, but they're just the arbitrary relative rules we're following to enable us to do this together. Yeah.
I am guilty of finding the drama of my life very serious matter. So I carry this, you know, inside, and so when I meet the teacher, I want it healed, you know, I want it fixed, I want it, you know, just kind of like, okay, you know, and with, so like there's a seriousness that I bring to it. And so the element of play sort of, you know, makes possible the no big deal, you know, the release of the strong attachment that it seems like, at least from my experience, that the pain of our lives makes it seem so intense and so serious, and so need of being healed in some way, and so bringing that to the teacher. Okay, you know, just help me with this awful thing, mm-hmm. and the teacher's, you know, the playfulness of just being able to. No big deal,
mm-hmm.
you know, not taking the drama of our personal lives just so seriously. It's really hard. But.
Right, and you know, I just want to speak to the other side, because life really is very serious. You know, people get sick and get old and die, and everybody we know we're going to be separated from. Like, have you heard that? That's one of our familiar, we chant that a lot, because it's important to recollect it, to know that this is finite, and it really does come to an end. And I love that, you know, Bodhidharma has this big frown, and there's all these, you know, frowning. And then you look at the Buddha, and the Buddha's always smiling, a little smile on his face. And there's somehow to be able take both in, because if it's just serious, it needs that lightness. But if it's just fun, then you miss it by 1,000 miles. So it's neither fun nor serious, and it is fun and serious. And it's... No, I'm not. You're here for the Nagarjuna discussion. Oh, dear. But right, you know, that we tend to go black and white. We tend to go to the extremes. And this is really about... And what happens to me when the two come together is it's tender. It's poignant. It brings tears to my eyes. Not sobbing, oh my God, I'm such a terrible person, tears, but whoa, life. Yeah. So we'll just sit for another moment or two.